The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina.
Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only It's Golf Season podcast. I am Joel Gaston with John Fraser, as usual. Not a lot to talk about this week.
Not at all. It was a very uneventful week in Ryderville, and everybody should just put up their feet and relax after an uneventful week that we have nothing to discuss.
No, nothing. Pretty much nothing happened at Mosaic Stadium on Friday night and Saturday afternoon that we need to talk about.
Not that I can remember, anyway. No, it's not like, you know, we had a first game delayed by smoke, proving that the CFL's policy actually has teeth. And it's not like the Riders absolutely came out and laid an egg in a game that you would kind of expect Calgary to lay an egg in. No, not none of that. But realistically, this is a Finding Sponsors for Joel podcast. And I don't mean the sponsors you find at AA. I mean the sponsors you find for the
one. Some may argue we may need those, but
and I still don't have to drink during the day. You know, it's still, I could choose not to, he says, as he is almost done a 7% double IPA.
Yes, it is that season. As I mentioned off the top, it is golf season for at least me. I know John golfs a little bit more throughout the year, obviously.
Thankfully, as the kids have gotten older, much more this year. It's been awesome.
It's something I've more or less stopped doing for a variety of reasons over the years, even before becoming a father. But got kind of roped back into it a few years ago, of course, with the Stadnik Invitational. So that is coming up again now next weekend already. A little earlier this year, I believe. I don't know. I think actually it was July last year because I remember complaining about how hot it was. Because the first year it was like September. And it was, it was September the first year, and it was kind of nice. I assume it's been perfect this week temperature wise in Regina, like just low 20s or late teens. I'm like, oh, this is perfect. This is what I like. So I imagine by next Saturday it's going to be like 40 degrees at the Humidex.
Certainly. Now, especially now that you have said it, like I feel like the second I go check this forecast, it will have changed to now, you know, basically hell's hottest day.
So. Yes, the Stadnik Invitational coming up next weekend, next Saturday. I believe if you're in the Regina area, you are still able to sign up if that's something you're interested in participating in. I will be there. John, in all likelihood, will not because he sucks.
that's
not
fair.
As a golfer.
I have to say that.
Not as a golfer, just as a life planner in this event. I don't know. I don't know what to say. We'll say life planner.
Let's go. I'm too good of a coworker. Let's do that.
You should be a shittier coworker.
Right. I should say, no, that is my weekend off. Not you coworker that's taking his one trip. Also, it's looking like 30 degrees and sun for you next Saturday. So
naturally, I don't trust the forecast more than like a day out. So I'm sure it'll change a few times, but in all likelihood, that's what you're looking at. So yes, basically how it works every year, if you're unaware at this point, a bunch of us go golfing. Other than a couple of guys, usually three, because when John's there, he's also in contention. there's usually a few guys who are kind of good who actually have a chance to win the individual award, and the rest of us suck, which is kind of the point, because we are raising funds for CFL Fans Fight Cancer, which this year is, of course, for a group in Manitoba. And it is based on our score, and usually in golf you want to shoot lower, but because we are raising money in this case, higher scores mean more money. So that is always the positive of the rest of us being really bad at golf. I've already told John that my scorecard is going to be rigged because he has agreed to sponsor me this year. So it's probably going to show up triple what I actually shoot. And we'll see how many good balls I apparently lose in this game.
Just don't break the spreadsheet, which is funny because
I
have a trophy.
I don't touch the spreadsheet. I'm going to leave that up to someone else on our team this year.
That's fair. I think our boy Greg is golfing with you this year. So
it's funny. Greg has replaced you in our foursome, which is interesting.
I've seen Greg golf.
Because, I'm used to
coming your way.
No, I'm used to Greg filling in for me, not for you.
It's the weird combination. But Greg can delete beers on a golf course. I've seen that. So that in that sense, he is a good John fill-in. But no, it's funny. I actually have a trophy for being the two-time runner-up that says lowest donation.
Yes.
Because again, when you almost win it twice, and I've always pledged, I said, if I ever win this thing, I'm doubling my donation, right? Because like to win it, you got to be like low to mid 80s. So at 25 cents a stroke, it's not a huge donation if you win it. So the problem is, is I have been mid 80s the last couple years, and I'm just a shitty donator. So this year,
nothing is stopping you from just donating more anyway.
Oh, I always have, for the record.
Same. Like, I'm not significantly more, because I don't shoot that well. But I have kind of rounded up to the nearest 10 most of the time.
Yeah, I've rounded up a little past that, mostly because I think I was so hammered when I went to make my donation at your place after we visited with Bryce, I added an extra zero.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good one last year. I'm glad I kept that receipt for taxes.
Fair enough.
Even with your scheme of shooting 300, I might still be lower.
You might, but we'll see. I'll find a way.
We will
find a way to punish you and help others for not showing up this year.
That's fair.
Because, I mean, we did have a really good time making fun of Mark Johnston last year, who didn't make it out after he won the inaugural event.
Yes.
I haven't looked at the list in a while. Is Gary back this year? Because he won last year, right?
Gary won. Dave's nephew. I don't believe so. I remember Dave and I discussing this. I believe
so. Really,
Mark is back, though.
Is he? Okay. I hadn't seen the updated list. I would hope Mark's back. I would say if he wasn't and Gary wasn't there and you didn't play this year, you basically gave up like your free pass to the win.
but see, it's funny. As we learned last year, I somehow do better with a bit of pressure. Because I remember, like, I started kind of shitty, and I'm like, okay, I need to dial it in and figure it out from here. Like, I think I started, like, double, single, double. And I'm like, nope, fuck this. I gotta show up, or I'm gonna be the laughing. Like, I can't be in, like, the lower tier of scores. And then I cowboyed up, had a couple beers, and was pretty good the rest of the way. Not good enough to win, but. Yeah, so I think I would, like, end up shooting, like, 107. I would, like, break 100 for, like, the second time in the past 10 years. And one of them was at Riverside here in the city, which has comically fast greens and, like, Augusta that you have to hit it to areas. So, I would implode and probably throw my clubs in a lake or a river, I guess. So, you know what? It's probably best off, especially if Mark and Gary aren't there, that I just sponsor you. That's realistically for my mental health and my budget, because my clubs aren't real cheap.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'm like that Sport Check commercial that's like, dress like a pro, don't play like one.
Hmm. Yeah.
I look good. Okay. My equipment's good. So sometimes I'm not that good.
No. I mean, some of us are never good. And that's okay. So basically, you can find it all over social media at this point. The Stadnik Invitational, they're on Instagram, they're on Blue Sky, they're on Twitter. I believe there's some kind of Facebook notification. Not just go look for Joe. He has all the information as well, whether you want to play or if you just want to sponsor any of the quote-unquote athletes taking part in this year's event. You can pick any from a number of people. There are some people, I believe, that are still looking for their first sponsor, which could also be very helpful as well. Of course, as always, all money straight to CFL fans, White Cancer.
And the donation, and this is the thing I love about this tournament, is we've always got a donation link, so it's not like you're giving us money and expecting us to donate it.
No, you're on the honor system to, like, do the donation yourself afterwards. So,
right.
Yes, you make the donation and you get the tax benefit at the end.
100%, which is great. Also, I can confirm that one sponsor is none other than Doug Brown.
Hmm.
Yes, I did get that bit of intel from Dave when he was.
So that's one of Dave's sponsors, obviously.
Yes, they've agreed to bury the hatchet if he sponsored him. Also, I forgot to bring this up when we preambled, but I wanted to give you a Malort update.
Okay.
As Ted, who you got to meet as you finally met, yes, the legendary Grandpa Ted, 10 out of 10 guy, mm-hmm, and his whole crew. So Ted has the bottle of Malort, but he also left Regina and headed west the mountain. So I've got, yes, like,
he told me he was going to BC with it first.
I have seen all the photos. He keeps texting me photos of, like, it's in Whistler, it's here. I'm like, okay, this is cool.
They need to send this stuff to the people at Malort. They could do a whole campaign around this at this point.
Oh, 100%. And it's to the point that Ted lost his wallet while hiking, but did not lose the bottle of Malort.
Well, that's good. That's important. You can replace a credit card.
That's right. Ted, applauso for you. I can't wait to try the stuff. I hear you've got some smuggled into Mosaic Stadium and ready to go the taste test episode.
I do. I'm not going to confirm or deny how I have a shot, but there is a shot up in my house right now available for when we decide to do this.
That's fair. I mean, they just threw it into your car. I get it.
Yeah, it ended up in my bag. I don't know how. I can neither confirm nor deny how that happened, but it did.
Either way, we're ready. Whenever, Ted, whenever you're back from BC, the next episode, we are ready, my man.
Mm-hmm. People who perhaps weren't ready were the Saskatchewan Roughriders on Saturday afternoon, as they lost their first game of the season, and the score was 24-10, but it was not that close.
It was oof.
It never felt that close. It never felt like even at 17-10 when they scored that touchdown, you thought, okay, maybe. It never got there. So we will talk about the game and everything leading up to the game. But as usual, yes, before we get to all that, John, for the Pile of Bones Brewing Company, what is in the glass this week?
Well, my family's in Ontario, so I'm top of mind is, of course, things from Northern Ontario. So I got myself some Lake of the Woods, the mix pack, Nautical Disaster Double IPA. I started sipping on it long before you came online, so it's done. So we are instead, thanks to our friend Bryce at Lucky Bastard, I'm straight into the gin. So expect a spicy episode.
I mean, when is it not, right?
That's true.
Often. I'll admit it. Like, there's been times where we record and, like, we'll talk, like, an hour or so later and be like, yeah, that wasn't that good today.
That's fair. That is.
Actually, we don't necessarily say that. We know when it felt really good. We talk more about that than the episodes where it's clearly like, oof, yeah, that.
Oh, you just.
That wasn't our best work.
No, exactly. Right? And for two amateur podcasters that just do this for the free booze, sometimes it ain't going to be good. But I have.
No.
Our intro's been good. I have a good feeling. It's going to be spicy. But to me, it all comes down to.
In fairness to whether the episode is good or not also depends on the content of what we actually get to talk about. And
right.
As we discussed.
When they're winning, the episodes aren't that good, especially when it's like a long streak. It's like, oh, well, they won again. So,
something really dumb and chaotic happens, for the most part, losing is good for business.
It really is. Oh, my goodness. In fact,
even if they won on Saturday, at least Friday night would have been good for business.
Oh, it's chaotic enough. Right. However, I feel like we need to say the magic words before you tell us what's in the glass to make this episode pop.
Curtis Rourke.
Ah, yes, Curtis Rourke.
Said the
man. And Zach Valeris did not answer his phone.
Zach's lawyers, we're waiting.
Mm-hmm.
Actually,
for
no,
me,
please,
we're
don't
not.
Sue us.
No, just John. For me, I have a classic, the Nokomis Craft Ales Classic IPA,
nice.
Because I'm still going through the Nokomis mix pack and felt like an IPA.
Can't go wrong. Nokomis
no.
is good.
Yeah, absolutely. Just solid all around. I don't think Jeff is capable of brewing a bad beer.
No.
Even an average beer. Like, everything in Nokomis is just next level. All of it.
Yes, 100%. I mean, there's no... What I find with Nokomis is they kind of stick to the basics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But they do the basics so well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not seeing anything like, you're not seeing like fruit infused, anything like that, but it's like anything Nokomis does, you can just pick it up and have a good time.
Mm-hmm. So people who may or may not have had a good time were Rider fans on Friday night and Saturday afternoon.
Yes.
Yes, as we talk about this now, finally, as you know by now, unless for some reason you've been on planet Mars for a week, the Saskatchewan Roughriders and the Calgary Stampeders did not play on Friday night as scheduled.
No.
We had a extremely long smoke delay, as basically from the explanation from Greg Reynolds afterwards, which I do need to get it out of the way, give him and the organization a ton of credit for making Craig available after the fact to discuss everything that had happened. It was 11 o'clock at night when by the time we all got down there and got to talk to him, understanding that it had been an extremely exhausting evening with a lot more to go that night. I think it was a few hours yet after that, I've been told, till like everyone actually left the building and got home.
Unbelievable.
From the like the business ops side, at least.
Right, of course.
Because naturally there's a lot to figure out when you need to play a football game the next day and you were expected to play that day.
Right. You got volunteers, you got concession workers, you got ushers, you got ticketing staff. And let's face it, like for most people you see at a game day at Mosaic Stadium, that's either a part-time gig or they're a volunteer, right? So the way that they brought everything together, pure class. And to the fans that stood there, and I've heard some stories. I heard that I've heard it compared to. I talked to Liam Richards, who works for the Canadian Press. He's a photographer there. He was at the Rattlers game the other day, and I was talking to him. And people are just comparing it to like a good party. Like I think the fact that
when I was leaving the stadium and walking back, there were some people out front who definitely had a good time still that evening.
Right, but that's what I mean. Like I mean, the 50-50 pot was at like $250,000. You had people. I think the fact, and let's credit Mark, let's credit Sabine, let's credit the entire game day op staff, let's credit
except whoever told Mark and Sabine to be the ones who have to deliver the kill shot at 10:45 for some reason.
I 100% agree with you, and I was talking to
actually about that. Funny enough, I bumped into them in the elevator on the way down to talk to Greg Reynolds, and I was like, they really made you guys do the kill shot? Like, jeez.
Yeah, right. I like Sabine's post that she's like, I didn't know I had a big scary mom voice in me. I think the fact that you basically had 20,000 people waiting around for something to happen, and you were able to entertain them, give them a good time. And from what I've heard from a lot of fans is it was like going to a small town party. And who doesn't love one of those?
Yeah. I mean, more expensive beer, but yes.
Right. But I mean, I think the fact that at least, like, you didn't see a bunch of people arrested for being too drunk, and maybe I'm mistaken in that. Like, you kind of just saw a bunch of people show up to Mosaic Stadium, hang out, listen to music. Sabine and Mark did a great job. The organization did a great job, like, trying their best to keep people entertained. But, like, from all accounts, everybody had a really good time just hanging out. Maybe it's because it was a nice – like, it's an entirely different story if it's -5, right? Mm-hmm. Don't ask me how you'd have smoke in -5, but I think – yeah, it sounded really good. And then kudos to the org for the way they put the next day together, too. And I mean, we'll talk more about that in a minute. But I really like before we talk about any negative, like there's so many positives out of what the Riders did with their fans that night. And the people coming up with the shit on the fly should be commended. And everybody on the Rider broadcast, like our boy Dunk, our boy Dave. Like, they start, so their pregame broadcast gas would have started when? 3 p.m.?
3 hours before kickoff, I believe they are.
Okay, right. Okay, so 3 hours before kickoff would have been 7. So that their broadcast started at 4. They did not have a football game to talk about and went off air at 11. It's hard enough
and
to
they,
be on
they
air.
And they had 4 hours commercial-free in there, too.
Which is absolutely insane. 4 hours of vamping as broadcasters. Everybody on that crew, tip of the cap to you. Like, the fact that, like,
TSN tapped out at, like, 9?
Well, 100% they did.
They did. No, it was earlier than that. I think it might have been, like, 8:30. Like, right. I think they went for about an hour or so and then decided that was that. They went forever. Jamie and I, the Green Zone, they went forever as well. They eventually pulled the plug at 9 p.m., which was absolutely fair because, I mean, Jamie had been on the air since 2 with the Green Zone before that, like the regular show even.
Unbelievable, Jamie.
So, yeah.
And kudos to again, like, the creativity of people. Like, I was listening. I was working a Rattlers game that night. So I'm on my way to Sastel Center. I'm listening to pregame, right? We've got, like, Dunks on there. Everybody on there, pregame and the Green Zone. Everybody just so damn talented. It's a great listen, no matter which way you choose. And I liked, like, coming back. It's like 11 o'clock, and Justin Dunk had grabbed Jamie Campbell, who happened to be there. And Dave Thomas was just, it was a masterclass by Dave in getting everything out of Luke. Like, you know, leaning into his work with the Red Cross and everything. Like, it's just, like, kudos to everybody. Like, I could not imagine Gas. Like, you and I could talk for hours. We throw Greg in. We throw some friends in. But 7 hours? Holy shit. And then to do it again the next day. It's wild. Wild work by everybody. So there's all the flowers. From me, at least.
So I don't mean, we don't think we need to get any further into that at this point. I wanted, the whole point of what I was bringing up, what Craig was talking about after the game, after the non-game, sorry, was how it all came about.
Yes.
Because what had happened was, and it became, we all kind of figured it out early on, was the fact that for like a rare night in Regina history, in Saskatchewan history, the wind stopped.
Right? That never
Because happened. Everything like the sort of the readings and where it was going and what they were expecting all kind of lined up until about an hour or two, I believe, before kickoff. Because everything was showing like literally around that time, the AQI in Moose Jaw was a 4. And the wind was coming from that direction. And then it just stopped. And the air lingered and lingered and lingered. And that's when we got stuck in the holding pattern. And I guess, in a sense, with so many close calls this league has had with this scenario, one was bound to happen eventually where this rule was truly going to be tested. Because, I mean, even if they wanted to kind of skirt around it like they had a couple of times before, this level was like 10, it peaked to like 14 at one point around like 9:30, I think, or something. And it was like, let's just, the writing is on the wall here. Like this, the fact that they held out hope to 10:45 to me was a little absurd. I understand why they want to, because it is very difficult from so many perspectives to pull off game day. So in their minds, I understand playing 11:15 at night the day of is far better than trying to start everything up again the next day. I understand that.
Yes.
But the writing was on the wall. Like, it was bloody obvious as of like 9 o'clock that this was not going to clear out anytime soon. It was still at a 10 by like 8 a.m., for God's sakes.
It was like, wow. We had it that morning in Saskatoon. So
we had it bad during the day earlier, and then it kind of cleared out, but then it came back.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Oh, yeah. Like, and when it was that bad, like, I'm talking, and I'm not a fucking professional athlete, but, like, I was struggling announcing at the Rattlers game just from being exposed to it earlier in the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it, too, and again, this is the broadcasters doing a really good job of keeping us all informed, was I think the biggest reason they kept trying was you couldn't get a hotel room in Regina for the Calgary Stampeders.
I don't think, like, that was really as big of a deal as people made it up to be.
You don't think so?
Everyone involved wanted to get the game in for that was maybe a portion of it, but the Riders, the Stampeders, the league, everyone I think was equally wanting to get this game in. I don't think there was one single thing holding it up.
No, that's fair. And it's too bad, though, that there wasn't a gust of wind because, you know, we were communicating with the Sickos committee and one of the Sickos was working overnights that night. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there you go. CFL football. Let's go. So,
yeah, I don't think they ever should have. And I think Trevor Harris said after the game, too, that he didn't sound like he was a fan of potentially kicking off at 11:15, even if it did clear out.
Right.
Which understandable. I mean, I'm sure there was mixed feelings about that in general. But as I said to some of the guys up there, and like Dusty came over in the press box at one point and we were talking a bit, and I was like, if for some reason, you know, like a hurricane blew through here in the next bit and this thing cleared out, I'm like, by the time the fourth quarter rolls around at like 1 a.m., there's going to be like 400 people here, but they are going to be the most unhinged 400 people you've ever seen in your life, and it's going to be incredible.
Yeah, I kind of would have liked to see that. That would have been
that would have been somewhat enjoyable. Yeah.
100%. It's like it's almost like those midnight games at some college football and college baseball and stuff.
Well, we almost had a Hawaii test, but in Regina, basically. If you were unaware, in the college football world, there is what is known as the Hawaii test. Because when Hawaii plays a night game at home, it kicks off at like midnight Saskatchewan time.
Yes, yes.
Which I don't know if I could do it anymore, but like I used to like wait because I used to love that game. And I still do, but how long I could stay awake after that now is questionable. But I used to be able to watch most, if not all, of that game.
I did once when Boise played there, and I'm like, never again.
Yeah.
Because it's
fun. We almost got that.
Yeah, which I would have enjoyed because I was fully prepared for it. I'm like, I don't care. I work tomorrow. Like, let's go ahead. Let's watch. Because I have so much friggin' Red Bull when I do a Rattlers game or I announce anything. Then I'm like, yeah. I'm not going to fall asleep till 1 or 2 anyway. So bring on chaotic late night football. So.
Yeah. But yeah, so Friday night, there was all good. There's definitely some bad from it too, though. I think the plug should have been pulled sooner. 100%. And this is where people are like, I've seen a lot of conversation about, and even some people I've been around since talking about, well, you know, if it's not good for like the players and all that to be out there, why are the fans out there? It's like, well, yeah, that's a fair point. But at the end of the day, the league is only responsible for their employees and the team's only responsible for their employees. The fans have agency in whether right. they sit there and sit through it or not. And the players and the refs and everyone else, and I agree with some people who have said, like, the cheerleaders shouldn't have been out there either. Like, there's a whole bunch of people that were out there that shouldn't have been, but they're not really protected in this scenario for a variety of reasons. And no. So, for their sake, it should have been decided a lot sooner that this game was not going to be played on Friday evening. No question about that. The other thing is there was no good communication about what really was going on.
No, I was texting you for updates.
Yeah,
because
I was in the stadium and we had very little. Like they went a good
Which is wild.
They went a good like 2 hours between announcements to the fans there, and it's like, okay, we know the air is still bad, but there should be some sort of discussion, some sort of, you know, clarity on the situation here. And I understand right. maybe they didn't quite have the, you know, how long we're going to wait thing in mind just yet, but eventually there had to be some more information coming out. And I will give CFL Commissioner Stuart Johnson credit. I heard him on the Green Zone on the drive in the next day because the league yes. obviously made him available to talk to media locally. And he talked again, like, and Craig Reynolds after the cancellation as well, too, reading between the lines of, like, they understood there was a communications failure on their part. Right. Calgary Stampeders would probably feel the same. And Stuart Johnson said, yeah, we need to move more open and transparent about what was going on, why it was going on. He's like, we need to talk about, you know, the air level is currently at this. We need it to be this to play. You know, there's a whole lot of things that sounds like they need to talk about in terms of communicating this sort of situation sooner and better to the fans in the building, like the media, whatever. I'm not going to sit here and complain about what was or wasn't communicated to the media.
Right.
No one really gives a shit. But the fans needed to know in the building that paid the money to be there deserved to know more than they did in the moment. There's absolutely no question about that.
100%.
Because and especially in the scenario, like this is very different than a weather delay for a
yes.
storm. Like if
right.
you're like you can pull out your phone and you can watch the radar for a thunderstorm moving through the area to know, generally speaking, probably when they're going to play again. This you cannot. Craig Reynolds said it, like, after I guess there's some sort of technology that can track the smoke a little bit in the air. But once the sun went down, they couldn't do it anymore. So they were essentially just stuck with the meter readings, which you can find publicly online, so you can see exactly where it's at, and the wind speed and direction to guess if it would get better.
And what I had heard was that they were ready to call it, but then they saw Moose Jaw clear up.
Like, yeah, Moose Jaw, that's what I said. Moose Jaw was at a 4 before the game started, and then the wind just stopped.
Right, and I think that's what maybe was part of the delay, is they're like, because again, you don't have the technology, and it's like, well, Moose Jaw is great. We're watching all these monitors betwixt here and Moose Jaw, and it's not happening. So you're right. Like, communication 100% could have been better. I've spoken yeah. to people at the game. I've spoken to people in the media. I've spoken to you. Like, you know, all the flowers, but it's rare that you see, especially with the CFL or any pro sports organization, And again, hat tip to these guys. You're right. They botched the communications plan. It was terrible. Like,
yeah,
being outside the stadium, like texting you, like, hey, what's going on? Because people are just curious, right? People are going like, hey, Fraze, like, what's going on with the Raiders game? Like, do you have an update? Uh-huh. And oh, yeah, it's delayed. But like, it's rare that you see pro sports organizations and leagues especially go, oh, wow, we could have been better that quick. So,
yeah, well, I mean, it's painfully obvious. It was painfully 100%. Obvious.
But I mean, you
and this is not a it's not a knock against any one individual in any of these roles. Like it was, it's just a systematic failure across the board,
right?
And that's right. It is what it is. Learn from it and be better. That's all. So not only can the communications plan obviously be better, but the Saskatchewan Roughriders need to be better as a football team.
Ooh, as, yes.
Saturday afternoon was not pretty. First of all, as we said, kudos to everyone who helped pull off the game. Big props to the organization for. Making the decision to allow people to bring in any food they want.
And, right, which was awesome. Like,
yeah. And any non-alcoholic beverage under a liter that was sealed. So basically you could bring in your own bottle of pop or whatever. That was fine right. as well. So cool to all
what
that.
What was the weirdest thing you saw?
The best thing I saw, I didn't see a ton. I saw a friend post on social media that they had brought a full pizza in, which is great.
yes!
But I did see because... since there's been construction in downtown Regina lately, the last couple of years, the farmer's market on Saturday has moved from like Victoria Park to Confederation Park, which is just in front of the Mosaic Stadium.
Yeah.
So the farmer's market was going on there from 11 to 1. It's a condensed version. I guess they shortened it because of the game.
Right.
And as I'm walking towards the gate with media enters, this guy walks past me. He's got a bag full of stuff that he obviously picked up from the farmer's market. I couldn't see inside there, but in his hand was also a pail, like a large pail of Saskatoon berries. So now I hope that guy was enjoyed it. I hope he sat there, probably didn't eat the whole thing because that would probably make you feel sick. But I hope he was just sitting there sort of munching on Saskatoon berries, like a bucket of popcorn throughout that game.
That's amazing. I wanted to see, and you and I were texting about this. I wanted to see somebody bring in like a whole lasagna in a tray.
Yep. Yeah, like if you were at the game and you saw something absurd, please let us know, because yes, I want to know what was, to me, the bucket of Saskatoons is like perfect representation of the province and I love it. But if you saw something weirder, please let us know because we want to know.
No, 100%. Like if you saw like a tray of lasagna, nachos tray, something like that. Like a whole pizza is like, that is 100% what I would do. I would get a carryout special because you could get like a carryout, a 2-liter bottle of pop. Like, let's go.
You can only bring in 1 liter though. So it had to be a 1 liter something.
Oh, yes. That's
the size restriction still included because I believe you can bring in like bottles of water under a certain size as long as they're sealed. So basically, they extended that to any non-alcoholic beverage.
That's fair. So, and again, kudos to them basically saying, hey, you probably spent all your money with us last night. Go ahead and bring it.
We can't get more stuff today because that's just the way that goes.
Well, and again, like rather than making people starve, they did it. And then, you know, they were all treated to an incredibly shitty football game.
Instead, they starved them for entertainment.
Oh, yes, Gassett!
It was a rough one. I wrote it in the piece. I think there was a lot of moments in that game. Like, I think we talked about it. The 81-yard touchdown from Damian Alford in this, you know, sort of the second possession of the second half was probably the final dagger. But you knew early on that something wasn't right this game when they pick off Vernon Adams Jr. on the first play of the game. And they respond with two sort of short passes, 7 yards, and a field goal. And you're like, oh. Because in my mind, I'm like, if I'm in that scenario, if I'm the coach, and if I'm the quarterback, I'm like, hey, these guys had a, you know, they had a rougher night than we did last night.
Yes, you go for the throw. You go for the kill shot.
You, first shot, I'm throwing that downfield.
Yes.
Even if it's not complete, you at least you tried. And I think you try to bury them early instead of giving them hope. And the Riders let them hang around. Well, they could have jumped out to a 14-0 lead, quite frankly, because they had that interception, and then on the next Calgary drive they fumbled.
Yes,
and it again followed up with a 2-and-out. They didn't get a first down until their fourth or fifth possession, and that's just not good enough in that scenario.
No, I will give you all the credit in the world you called it after those back-to-back possessions. You're like, I would have taken a shot here. They're in trouble.
Yeah. It's obvious. We've seen it how many times where you get the game gifted to you on a platter early, and if you don't take advantage, it is going to haunt you, especially against a quarterback as good as Vernon Adams Jr.
And that is exactly it. I think that's the thing. When we were all collectively saying, oh, Calgary's not going to be great this year, I think there's two people we largely disrespected. One is Vernon Adams Jr. The other is Damian Alford. I can't think the last time, and maybe it's because so many first overall picks in the CFL draft are linemen, are defensive guys that you don't – it's hard to watch them unless you watch the team every day and go, that guy's making an impact. Mm-hmm. But Alford has been real good.
Yep.
The kid's got the kid's got 221 receiving yards already this year, right? So you pair him with Vernon Adams. I know Calgary was banged up, and you need to put the boot on the throat. And the broadcast, the TSN broadcast, was talking about how VA likes to go deep early.
Yep.
And it cost him, right? Like that should have been a game where the Saskatchewan Roughriders go into Death Star mode. Instead, they stub their toes, fall over themselves, and end up just
vomit all over themselves too. Like just nothing. The first half, especially, nothing worked.
No,
I'm sorry. Pro Football Focus named Trevor Harris the honor roll quarterback of the week.
Oh,
and I understand it is like only numbers based, and he technically played a clean game, but that first half especially was not good. Then in the second half, he hit every 3 yard out all the way the rest of the game. Like he did not play well. He did not do anything spectacular. He was maybe the third best quarterback in that game behind the backups who also ran sneaks very well.
Ooh.
It's fact.
You're not wrong. But
Tommy Stevens did his job better than Trevor Harris did in that game. And I'm sure Trevor Harris would be the first to agree with that.
Tommy Stevens almost did his job better than AJ Ouellette in this game. I don't understand how, like, I could expect Calgary to come out and poop their pants. You've just been through probably the most chaotic thing you've ever been through as an amateur professional football player. You know, you went fully expected to play a game, fly home, sleep in your own bed that night to, oh shit, we're staying here in Regina, we're staying at this hotel, and like, I'm sure like the breakfast wasn't the best breakfast. I'm sure that a lot of
half of them stayed at the Hotel Sask, so I'm sure it was fine. Other half were at the dorms, a few of our, in those like the little four rooms with a bathroom.
That is incredible.
So it depends entirely on where you were.
right. But I mean, still, Calgary.
Though we also joked upstairs, I was like, because Derek Moncrief's family still lives here, right? So this is like his off-season home is here. I was like, did he give up his bed for VA last night so he got a really good night's sleep?
let us, you know, get some.
Like, how many air mattresses can we jam in the Derek Moncrief's house?
Right. Because, you know, and hey, at Derek Moncrief's family, you know, he got some good home cooking. That's some good homemade food ready to go. Probably some bacon and eggs in the morning, right? Like, it's just the fact is, you couldn't beat a team that A, flew into your city, B, went through something that I don't think. Like, man, I've been part of some
I think they were better equipped to handle this. And I have to give Jamie and I of the Green Zone credit for this, because he talked about it a bit when I was listening on the way home from the actual game. Was we know who, like, the heartbeat of the Calgary Stampeders are, and that's Vernon Adams Jr. Like, we saw it last year when he was still technically Nathan Rourke's backup, and he was the guy leading the pregame, like, excitement. He was still the emotional heartbeat of that team, which is why everything fell apart there. Now he gets to be that guy. We don't know who that is for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Like, you kind of take the team takes sort of like the mindset of the leadership, and Trevor Harris, for how good he is at a lot of things, isn't necessarily the rah-rah, you know, when you need to pull your team out of the mud moment kind of guy. He's not that guy. I don't know who it is. Because the other interesting part about Friday night. The other interesting part about Friday night was we saw no riders on the field at all whatsoever, which is fine.
Right.
That's what the rules state. There was the odd Stampeder that made their way out and was throwing the football with fans.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, which shows to me a very different feeling in the locker room for the Calgary Stampeders than the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Yes. One is like, a loosey-goosey, we're having fun atmosphere, and one is a very business-like approach. And neither is wrong. Neither is wrong, to be clear. But in this scenario, I think we, because everyone sort of thought, okay, the Calgary Stampeders had a really tough night. The Riders are going to come out and kick the shit out of them. But I think their sort of more emotional approach to the game helped more than we gave them credit for in that scenario versus the Saskatchewan Roughriders' business-like approach. Because it's kind of the same thing we saw last year in the last game of the regular season against Calgary when Winnipeg pulled off that bullshit win before it. Yes. And it just sucked all the life out of the team, and they just played like it was a pre-preseason game even, not even a preseason game.
I think it's interesting with Calgary, and I don't think there's a broadcaster, expert, columnist, anybody in the CFL that had them being anywhere near to good this year.
Probably Ryan Valentine. That's about it.
I mean, we love Ryan. Ryan's the biggest homer you will ever meet in your life. Like, I love Ryan. I love his passion. I love his energy. I love him as an NLL broadcaster, because that guy is kind of like me when I'm on the NLL broadcast. It's like, it's us versus the world, and deal with it. So Valentine, you're right, is probably the only guy, and the sickos jokingly, when we went on their podcast and shit all over Calgary for 20 minutes, now the sickos coming out and be like, whoa, we said they were going to be good. Don't listen to the context. Like,
I said it on CBC as well in very different words, but I said it as well that I didn't expect Calgary to be very good, and it's funny, when it was on last week with Adam Hunter before the game, I was like, I know I said Calgary wasn't very good. He's like, yeah, we'll play the tape. He's like, well, no, we won. I was like, okay. And I was like, well, you could. I don't care. It would have been funny.
It absolutely would have. Like, clearly. Yeah. And I love that the discussion on Blue Sky has been that the Fraser curse kind of went dormant for the summer and is now out with the full vengeance of proving. Because, again, I feel like this is the Fraser curse, because I famously said after the Grey Cup, I enjoy being right more than I enjoy winning, and the Fraser curse is like, fuck you.
that's entirely fair. Now, it is important to note that, yes, I think the Saskatchewan Roughriders played a bad game. I think there were certainly aspects of that game that were probably a long time coming. There's a game or two they probably should have lost before this.
Yes.
So that's the sort of things coming full circle. And sometimes you need to get whipped to really start taking some of your flaws seriously as a team. We've seen that a lot in football. I'm very curious as to how this game on Saturday is going to go against the BC Lions, because we've seen a bit of a trend defensively where very good quarterbacks tend to pick this zone defense apart.
Yep.
We've seen VA do it now. We've seen Zach Kolaris do it in the West Final and the regular season. Oh, and some guy named Nathan Rourke is back for the Lions this week, so they get to play that. So we'll see how that goes.
Right, and the Lions are a completely different team with Nathan Rourke. And as well,
no
too,
question.
Let's not forget, they're banged up. The Riders are going to be missing guys. So I think, to me, the real test after all of this madness this week is going to be, how do you respond against BC? And to me, I look forward to seeing how this team comes up the mat.
Yeah, and that will tell us a lot about them, how they respond in this game. To me, the result doesn't even necessarily matter beyond how much a result normally matters. Like, if they come out and they play really well or play well enough, but still lose, you're like, okay, I see the process here. I see sort of what, you know, I see it. It just didn't work out today, and that happens sometimes. If they come out and they shit the bed again, then it's a whole other conversation, I think. And because I think at this point, there's nothing to like hit the panic about this team being bad or anything like that. They have some flaws. They have some things to work on, but everyone does. It's the middle of July. And what you hope to see is, okay, win or lose, you hope to see progress off what happened last week. If you don't, then I think it's fair to start questioning maybe not necessarily the long-term of, you know, viability of this team this year, because it is the CFL. It is a long regular season. I mean, hell, this team lost 7 games in a row last year and still finished second in the West, right? So
that's fair.
There's still a whole lot that can happen, but you don't want – this is the thing this team has to do this year, is even if they end up 11-7 again, it's to not have the long, prolonged losing streak.
No, and I would agree. I also think that the only thing that really worries me is I'm not ready to hit the panic button or anything like that, but typically sometimes teams will give you a roadmap on how to stop a team. And to me, Calgary just showed you the roadmap on how to stop Saskatchewan.
Calgary's defense deserves a ton of credit in that game as well. They are a very good unit. Dave Dickinson is looking right to make a change at defensive coordinator. I don't think there's any question about that at this point. And they completely rebuilt that defense. They are a machine in the middle of that defensive line. And they beat the Riders playing the Riders' defense better than they do. They stopped the run. And they played a fairly tight zone.
They held AJ Ouellette to 9 yards. And I know AJ's had his ups and downs in Saskatchewan, but AJ Ouellette, that is his career low, is 9 yards, right? So kudos to Calgary defense, who came in like worst rushing defense in the entire league.
In fairness to, as Ryan Ballantyne brought up in the 3-down group chat this week, half of those yards basically came in one game. So they had a really bad game, and it's kind of skewed their numbers a little bit to just how good or bad they are against the run.
I mean, that's what happens when you've played five games, right? An outlier is going to all of a sudden look really bad. So here we are. Fraser Curse is in full effect. The Calgary Stampeders, your Grey Cup champions.